Welcome to the Drive Along Podcast, where in each episode I interview a guest uniquely involved in the car culture universe.
So with me again is David Case. About a year ago, we did an interview together, and as a matter of fact, the rest of this podcast will be most of that interview. But because of such an interesting situation where David had built a brand new online automotive auction company, and I caught him very early on in the development or the launching. It was fully launched by the time we talked. But at the end of the podcast, I said, you know, Dave, a year from now, we should catch up. So here we are, a year and a bit later, and welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. It's really great to be with you again. And I do thank you for being a man of your word to come back and revisit all of this a year later. Some things have happened, and maybe we can talk about those. And I will attest to you catching the company very early in its infancy. So listeners out there, know that Ron does his homework.
I appreciate that. So year later, things are robust. Things are booming. I've seen you at so many different events, and I've probably only seen you at about a hundredth of the events you've attended in the last year. So, so how's it going? What's happening with Collector Car Canada?
It's funny you mentioned that, Ron, about seeing each other at events. During the week, I keep my calendar electronic because unless I'm out visiting with a seller, I'm usually in front of my computer, the life of an e-commerce entrepreneur, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But on the weekend, I'm often running around to these events. I suppose there are lots of them in the evenings too, but I keep a calendar on my wall in my office here where all of the Saturdays and Sundays have markings on them. And not that many during the week, because the weekly ones are often the ones during the week are often weekly events that I know sort of by memory, which ones I like to attend. Sure. So occasionally I'll have someone walk into my office and they'll see this calendar on the wall and they'll say, gee, you don't do much during the week. But I promise that not to be true. And we now have the sales traction for me to point to support that point.
Much better. So what's transpired in the year? What's new? What worked? What didn't work?
Sure. Well, as you say, Ron, we talked. I think we were only about 6 or so weeks into running auctions. We run auctions, online auctions, a week at a time, typically Wednesday to Wednesday. And our first auction launched June 1st of 2021. I think you and I spoke around mid July of that same year. Mm-hmm. At that time, I think we had proven that we knew how to present a car for auction. We knew a bit about merchandising, and we knew about making something pleasing to the eye on the web. At this stage, I think I can say that now we know a little bit about how to sell our sellers cars for them. Again, we are a service, an auction service. We have zero inventory and we never take custody of the cars or the money to pay for them. So since August of this year, so going back almost 3 months, our sale rate is more like 60%, which for the industry is quite good. And I would suggest that percentage is not complete yet either, because we do have some items that might yet add to the numerator to bring the percentage up. And that leads me to go ahead.
Sorry, that's just, I'm aghast. That's excellent.
Thank you very much. It's something I'm very, very excited about. We need to get the volumes up now. So, like I say, I'm very happy that we've got a percentage like that, but we need to be able to apply that percentage against a greater population of auction items. But mm-hmm. One thing that's helped us improve our sale rate is something we've come up with called the Collector Car Canada CCC backlot. And our backlot items, our backlot is just as virtual as the auctions. When people want to go see a car, they visit the seller's home or wherever the seller has the car stored or parked. But if an item does not make reserve on an auction and the seller wants to do this, we put it on our back lot with a buy it now price of the reserve price. So although through our CCC second chance and last chance systems, the reserve price is not a mystery at the very end of an auction that doesn't make reserve. Right. On the back lot, those prices are right there for everyone to see. And that second chance and last chance system, I'm not sure how much I told you about them last year, but they remain in place and they are really interesting differentiators. They're a little too involved for discussion here, but they're certainly set out on our How It Works page on the website if listeners want to check that out.
Okay. Yeah, because we really didn't get into that last year. We were just into the first blush, if you like, the whole concept works.
Well, as I say, they are really interesting differentiators to me, but a little too involved for this forum. So I encourage listeners, if they're interested, to take a look at that How It Works page on the collectorcarcanada.ca website.
Okay, excellent. So overall, very good first year, 60%. I'm just knocked out 60% sale rate. That's phenomenal. That's incredible.
Thank you.
And the addition of the backlot, what a great idea. You know,
well,
in some cases, you know, maybe I just didn't have the coin in July to get what I wanted, but it's still there. And
I think it's more about certainty, Ron. Uh-huh. If a unit during auction doesn't really makes it to shouting distance of the reserves, but doesn't make it, people are uncertain about what they're really going to have to pay. And mm-hmm. as much as I love that second and last chance system, they're very quick. People have to make quick decisions. And that's by design in an auction environment. But when you know the price, the uncertainty goes away. And it's made a lot of sellers happy. And I think buyers too.
Fantastic. What a great addition.
Another addition is our CCC White Glove Concierge Service. Now, this one admittedly is not for everybody, but there are people out there who just want to disengage from the entire sale process. And that's where our White Glove Concierge Service comes in. So when we've executed on this for just a couple of sellers so far, it's a brand new program. We'll come pick up the car and sort of take care of everything from soup to nuts. And of course that comes with a fee, and the fee comes as a percentage of the closing price. So the seller's never out of pocket for any fees, and we negotiate a fair percentage and sort of take it from there. The one thing I'll add is that we always run no reserve auctions on these so that the seller is assured that his or her car will sell.
Mm-hmm.
And those for me are fun little projects. I love being close to the cars, but actually getting it to the shop myself for the inspection and speaking to the mechanic about what the car might need and what its strong points are. That's fun stuff to me. Photographing the car, also kind of fun, and making sure that it's detailed and ready to go for photo day, for example.
Well, that's full circle. And we cover that later on in the podcast that we recorded last year. I mean, that's your personal passion and what you love doing. So that makes total sense. I'm not surprised at all that a White Glove Concierge program became part of the Collector Car Canada. That has Dave written all over it, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. No, it can be. I mean, this whole process it's not like buying or leasing for 3 years a brand new minivan. Collector cars are meant to be fun. And this gets me in on the fun a little bit, I guess.
Well, it probably saves you from buying more too, because you get to play with them and then.
touche.
Well, is there anything else you want to add, Dave? Because this has been really good.
No, it's just been a fun ride so far, and we've accumulated quite a much bigger following than we had the last time we spoke.
Of course,
it's really neat for our daily updates, for example, we use a company called MailChimp for those well known in the industry, certainly the marketing industry. And MailChimp, of course, provides us statistics with open rates and click-through rates. And not to get too far into the corporate brain trust, but MailChimp tells us a certain percentage standard for the industry, and we're beating that by 15 or 18 points every day. So it really validates, not that I've got some great business, but more that the industry is growing, and people like the offering. If I asked you right now, Ron, if you think there's going to be more or fewer collector cars 5 years from now being sold online, do you think it's going to be fewer? I kind of doubt it.
No, I don't see that at all.
No.
And from my other interviews on our podcast here, and also from the live events that I produce, it's absolutely going the other way.
Sure. Yeah. So it's neat to be on an upward trend, not just from the collectorcarcanada.ca business itself, but just the industry at large. I think we're on a growth curve, and a rising tide floats all boats, as the saying goes.
Collector Car Canada, it's your baby, your concept. It's an online auction site, and I'll assume with the word Canada in it is a Canadian online auction site for collector car enthusiasts, correct?
You got it, Ron. A key aspect of the site is Canadian currency. I personally, and I bet a lot of your listeners have seen a proliferation of U.S. sites trading in U.S. dollars. And I watch along, as probably many of them do as well. I've even bought and sold on those, on one of them anyway. As great as they are, as slick as they are, as great an operation as many of them are, it just provides a little bit of red tape for we Canadians up here in the Great White North, having to get our hands on U.S. dollars, having to send a wire to somewhere we may never have been, rigmarole of importing the car and maybe having to pay duty and declaring that you're exporting the car from the U.S. to the U.S. side and paying HST on the Canadian side and all that good stuff. All surmountable tasks, but maybe not the easiest thing to run through at a time when a person's more interested in excitement than administ trivia.
Understand. Flying the ointment, could American buy on the site? So reverse it here.
Oh, sure. We're on the World Wide Web. So when we say world, that implies exactly that. We haven't seen it yet so far on the site since our first sale went live June 1st. But if the word spreads in the U.S., I would not be so surprised to see American buyers coming up here. It's a brisk market on the Canadian side and the U.S. side, maybe even more brisk in the U.S. than Canada right now.
I see.
But I don't anticipate that to cause any troubles for our Canadian sellers. The part about where the car is going is pretty much invisible to them, I think.
Okay. I was also thinking of our snowbirds. So people that are down in the winter and they get on the site and, wow, that's something I have to have. But they're basically by default trading in U.S. or they're in the U.S. and maybe they want to bring that car down to Florida, Arizona, or wherever they are. So there's obviously no challenges to that.
Sure. It's just for people like that, they'd probably be registering the vehicle in Canada with Canadian plates anyway. So right. The fact that they're driving it around in the southern U.S. probably wouldn't make a difference. But if they wanted to register it in the U.S., I'm personally not at the stage of my life yet where I'm a snowbird and having to worry about these things. But
because you're still young.
Yeah, just a kid. But I would imagine something like that is doable, just like it would be if they bought a brand new Toyota.
Okay. Let's talk about the site itself. Knowing about auction, a little bit about auctions, enough to be dangerous. There's reserve bids in some situations. So just if I'm a buyer, if I'm a seller, if I'm a interested bystander, how do I get involved with the site?
Sure. Maybe I'll cover the sellers first and then the buyers. In terms of interested bystanders, that can be my preface to the answer of the question. Again, it's a website and it's publicly available. No need to log on to view pages. It's right there for everyone to see. If timing isn't right for them to be in the market to buy or sell, they can watch along and see what the market is doing. In terms of sellers, we've got a comprehensive seller submission package. And the more the seller gets involved with providing information to Collector Car Canada, the better off they'll be and the better their car is going to do. The more specialized a car I would submit, the more information and the more knowledgeable the buyer or bidder is going to be. So like I say, we've got a 6-page process of just some questions about the car, sort of year, make, model as the basics. And then we're asking about paint condition, original paint, recent maintenance, if any modifications. In some cases, cars are 20 or 30 years old, and which does not preclude them from being near mint condition cars. This week, we happen to be running a 2001 model and a 1991 model, both great looking cars. But over the years, things might have changed on that car. Every used car has a story, of course. So again, the thing to keep in mind there for sellers is the more information, the better. On the buyer side, like I said, no need to register to watch along. And then we've got two levels of registration on the site. One is a basic membership, which enables the user to comment and like the comments of others. It also gives them an opportunity to get on our list for our daily update. We do send out an update about what's cooking with the site every day, every morning. And then to be able to bid, of course, there we've got to be a little more careful when money's changing hands. We call that a fully registered member. Along the way, they submit credit card information. A little tangent here. The credit card information never comes into the hands of Collector Car Canada, as a matter of fact. So it's a little less, the perceived risk certainly for our users, a little less in that Stripe.com is the outlet we use, very commonly used in the e-commerce space. And that's who's got custody of credit card information.
No, I understand that. And I think that's that double blind is what most of us do now to legitimize it and also to show that we're not taking that information. I have a live event and I use TicketBud to sell tickets for the event, and the back end is Stripe. So sure. Just like you and the game. So that way I never see the information. I simply get the reports.
And the beauty of it is a guy like you probably prefer that anyway, but you can tell people, I don't get to use your credit card even if I wanted to.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So I happen to have the site up here on the other screen. And great. I noticed that one of the vehicles is a starting bid of $1. Now, is that just an incentive to look at it? It looks like it's 5 days from that auction closing. In 5 days, let's say it's at $10, could I actually buy that car for $10? How does that work?
Well, we definitely make a habit of not disclosing what reserves are before they're in place. But anytime there's a no reserve vehicle, if you click around on some of the other past auctions, you'll see a few that have had no reserve. We explicitly state no reserve in the title of the auction. So I think I know which vehicle you're looking at right now, just because I have a pretty intimate familiarity of what our offerings are. And we start all the auctions off at $1. I don't think you see no reserve in front of the description of that car.
That is correct.
So I suppose we could start it at $500. We could start it at $100. We just started at $1. That particular vehicle, I think it's been live for about 36 hours now. And the fact that it's still sitting at $1 isn't really a surprise to me. All the action is at the end.
Of course.
But you're not going to get that one for $1, Lon. I will outbid you. I will outbid you up to 101 because the first bid is $1, the minimum increment of the next bid is $100 when the price is under $5,000.
Okay, so it's going to cost me $101 to outbid you. So
that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, just for our listeners, I mean, that aren't familiar with auctions, you know, you go on these different sites and obviously yours, and you see these incredible deals, but obviously there is a reserve. There's, you know, it's just where the actual process is starting.
Well, incredible deals. I have a few chat groups just with friends on WhatsApp, and we're forever, there are three of us in particular who are forever trading these listings, showing each other listings. Look at this price. Look at this price. And I'm always saying, guys, that's not the price. It's just, it doesn't matter until the hammer drops, of course.
Of course.
It's enticing. And I guess that's the whole idea of it, to get people to bid.
Dave, I want to pick your brain a little bit about the market itself. You know, is there a certain era of car that's going to be easier to buy online? You know, I'm just thinking 50s and 60s, they're now, you know, 70, 80 years old, and there's still a lot of them in the marketplace, certainly from the car shows that I run and others that I attend and swap meets and cruises and everything else. There's still a lot of that vintage in the market, but they're old now. Is that sure. Something that, you know, you would recommend buying online, or is there a point where you should actually be physically looking at the vehicle?
You won't get any argument from me, Ron, that physically looking at the vehicles are not a good thing. In the auction period, certainly I always encourage people to get to know the car. Even better, get to know the seller. For a car like that, you're probably buying the seller as much as you are the car itself. But in terms of choosing what you want to buy, I'm reminded of your past podcast with Steve Sheriff, whom I've never met, but I really like the podcast you carried out with him. He talked about buying what you like. As the name of my business implies, collectorcarcanada.ca, I'm targeting collectors. I'm not targeting the business side so much. So that's why I'm talking about buying what you like, as opposed to buying something as an investment. And in terms of the era of cars, who's to say? Like I say, get to know that seller really well. And I really do think that's more of a consideration than the car itself.
So you
once, of course, you found a car you like.
Of course. Actually, I think you have a good story you were sharing with me earlier about getting to know the seller. And then basically, once you figured out who he was, I think he was in Saskatchewan or something, you couldn't go after that car fast enough. Why don't you share that?
Yeah, that's a true story. And maybe we'll get into some of what led to it a little later when I talk about the inspiration for the starting the business. But that was an ad for just another old car. But one I've always kind of liked, and it happened to be manufactured the year I got my driver's license. I seem to like the era of cars from when I was started to drive, actually. But that was a car that I noticed online in an ad. I was keeping an eye on it, kept a distant email conversation going with the owner, who happened to be in Moose Jaw. I think the fact that he was in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, sort of discouraged people from going to see his car. And that's a bit about bringing the power of the web to the collector car market in Canada. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in any event, this fella in Saskatchewan, he made an update to his ad that dealt with some maintenance. At that point, I realized, oh boy, maybe this is a good car to go buy. So we set up a FaceTime call. I expected it to last maybe 10 or 15 minutes. But I got the tour of his garage, his other collector cars. And through the course of the 1 hour FaceTime call, I remember that evening I had a tennis match to get to. I was afraid I was going to be late, but I didn't want to hang up on the guy.
Right.
But I got to see the other cars in his garage, got to know him as a person a little bit. Turned out he's an airplane mechanic. And it turned out that he changed the timing belt on this car himself. So he put about 50 or 60 bucks worth of parts and his own sweat and labor. But to someone like me, that's worth hundreds, if not over $1,000, because exactly. I can't do the work myself. And I think he probably looked at it as, oh, this is how I can get my car sold. I'm willing to put the 4 or 5 hours into the job. You know, 40 minutes into our 1 hour FaceTime call, I wanted to send my deposit. I was able to keep myself collected long enough to hang up. We did do just that. And a couple weeks later, I flew to Regina, took a one-way car rental to Moose Jaw, and drove 2.5 hours or 2.5 days rather back to Ontario in a 35-year-old car I'd never laid eyes on, but I just had the peace of mind from the hour I spent on that FaceTime call with the seller.
That's incredible. So you mentioned that was partially the inspiration for starting the business. So why'd you start the business?
Well, the chronology, the timing is similar. That's not so much the inspiration, but a big part of the inspiration is, certainly as I think I've implied earlier, I've been looking at car ads since before I had my driver's license, but the online auction world has really developed in the last 5 to 10 years. And there are certain US sites I like to keep an eye on just to look at the cars. Like I've implied to you, Ron, I really do approach this from the enthusiast side. But last summer, before the one I just described, I bought another car online and I realized, geez, I have more cars here than I have parking spots. And that's not to discourage people from buying a collector car. I wasn't up to 2 cars or 3 cars. I was up to 6. In any event, I realized one of them had to go. I decided to use one of the leading site in the US. A lot of your listeners are probably thinking it's probably such and such. And if they are, they probably have it right. On that deal, I subconsciously turned my back on my local market. Certainly the city, I live in the most populous city in the country, the most populous province in the country, and the Canadian market altogether. I decided I'm going to go for the premium on the dollar. At the time, the US dollar was probably a 25 or 30 cent premium, mm-hmm. 15 or 16 months ago. I don't remember exactly now. And I was going to go after that big US market. That makes a lot of sense if you have a one-of-a-kind car. My car it was a neat car. It was a 2001 Porsche 911. So it was always a dream of mine to own a Porsche 911, and I really liked my car. But it happens to be the least collectible Porsche 911. A great car, don't get me wrong. It served me well. But the fact is, Americans looking at my car would have passed about 3,000 of them on the way to my house to come and see it or come collect it. So I implicitly turned my back on the local market. And even so, the action I was getting on the 1 week auction while it was up for bids was from Toronto. And that's where I live. And I realized, holy smokes, I'm getting some people in Toronto seeing this US site. You're going to find some people through the web, but I had kind of turned my back on them. Just as timing goes, as I mentioned earlier, I happened to be in the garage of the seller of the Saskatchewan car as the auction ended. And he and I were both looking at our phones, watching the clock count down. And I needed to move this car because I had nowhere to put the one I was picking up. And I sold it. I didn't get punished, but I definitely sold it at lower than what I thought was market because I needed to sell it. But it was I was about to embark on this 2.5 day journey driving this 35-year-old car home. And I had 2.5 days to think about, gee, you know, if there was a site in Canada, I think it would be a more efficient market. And I probably would have been happier with the price I got. I don't think it could possibly be as big as the sites in the US. There's no two ways about it. We have a smaller market here in Canada. But I think there is room for a collector car auction site in Canada, even if it can't be as big and as bad as those US providers. So I let those thoughts dance around in my head through the fall last year. And then when the holidays came along, I started to think, if I'm going to make a go of this, I got to get going on it. And I started to put my head down in January. And sure enough, we launched and the first auction went live June 1st.
That is a great Canadian story. The big US sites and the big US market, that experience turned around that you're finding Canadians that were on that site and therefore there's an appetite and a niche and now you're filling that. That's great. Great.
Thanks, Ron. I hope you're saying the same thing in 5 and 10 years. But yeah, there are Canadians using those US sites. Now I'm in a bit of a conflict of interest when I try to explain to them, but they're not getting good prices for their vehicles or their vehicles are not meeting reserve. it's just not something that big U.S. market customer wants to do, to come to Canada to buy something that's more easily procured in Canada.
That makes sense, and that that gives you a unique market north of the 49th.
That's right. And that's what our focus is. That's why sometimes people tell me my business name, Collector Car Canada, is a bit of a mouthful. And I acknowledge that it is. Each of the words, however, has a purpose. And the Canada part is very important to imply Canadian spec vehicles, Canadian resident vehicles, Canadian currency trading.
And I also notice it's a .ca. So again, Canadian, even on the address.
Definitely true. CollectorCarCanada.ca, and another Canadian implication.
Exactly. You were mentioning about the 911 and least valuable. How does turn the light more on you as a collector than as the founder of Collector Car Canada? So how do you determine the value of that 911, or like, do you go online? Do you use the valuation tools that are available to you? Is it in chat rooms? So if a listener wanted to get into the market and was just nervous because they just didn't know that much other than specifically what they like, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, your first question is, how do I determine the market value? And I don't. I think you know this, and a lot of the listeners do too. The market determines the value, of course. The online valuation tools, yeah, I definitely use them. They're one data point. But it offers a valuation tool. You key in your car's year, make, model, and some other basic characteristics, and it'll spit back a valuation. It spits back four valuations for the year, depending on what the condition is of the car. Mm-hmm. And certainly that's a problem. That's a really good indicator. It's as good as an indicator you're going to get for that generic year, make, model. Of course, once a car drives off the dealership, a couple of weeks after a car drives off the dealership's lot, it's different. It's every single used car is different. There's no two ways about it. So that's why there's always going to be a range of selling prices for the same year, make, and model of car. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking in terms of what something is worth. As you'd expect from someone who's been interested in cars since he was about 5 years old, I have a lot of friends who are interested in something to talk about. One thing I try to keep in mind, rather, with that leading insurer who offers these valuations is that I'm always mindful that the higher the valuation, the higher is the insurance premium. So they're in a bit of a conflict of interests. But like I say, it's probably the best place to go find
a generic valuation. They call that a win-win, but yeah.
Every business is looking for one.
Exactly. Right. When you, and again, this is Ron talking to Dave about Dave's experience. You buy a car at auction, you drive it home, you get it hauled in or whatever. And it's running, it's great. Is there anything that you would recommend with regards to, I don't know, percentage or a dollar amount that you should have in reserve in your back pocket for just things that aren't going to be right with the car? Or
definitely a reasonable question, but I'll address something you said at the beginning of it in introducing it. Anytime I've bought a car remotely, I suppose I've done it 4 or 5 times now, always a fun experience. I always make sure that I can get the licensing in place and get a good feel for the car that I can drive at home. So I prefer to do a fly-in drive, which is a common thing, but some people don't have the time to do it. And some people are willing to take on projects. They set out to take on projects, in fact, and they have the car shipped or hauled, as you say. I don't know that there are any hard and fast rules about what to expect. Like I was saying, I always try to get to know the seller. You're buying the seller as much as you're buying the car. Mm-hmm. And getting to know that seller a little bit, just what they say and how they've treated their car and the maintenance they've put into the car, all things you want to get to know before you make a deal. It's going to give you a reasonable expectation, I think, of what you're buying. But as I was kidding earlier, I seem to do better buying sight unseen than I do when I go see the car. But I always try to, with the previous thoughts in mind, I always try to attach a conservative number to that and hope to be pleasantly surprised when it works out. A car I bought last year through one of the US sites in Georgia, I almost don't want to tell this story. If there's any wood around it, knock on it, but it was almost too good to be true. I flew down to Georgia. I jumped into this car, started it, and got a feel for the car, was a little apprehensive. And so far, including an oil change last fall, I've put about $300 into that car. So I think the due diligence I did in advance paid off. That's not to say every story goes that way.
That's fantastic. That is really well done.
Thank you.
The collector car market, you know, right now prices are up, but what do you see in a year, in 5 years? I mean, is it, throw a dart, I understand that, but what's your thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, I'll start with saying my crystal ball is foggy, just like yours is. But I'll also start by saying if I wasn't bullish, I don't think I would have undertaken this venture. But we're in a demographic here in Canada, certainly, and to an extent our influential neighbors and to the south are as well, where we've got an aging population that's a lot of whom have done well financially. I always laugh at seniors discounts. I don't know why we have seniors discounts. They're the ones with all the money. but they've done well with, a lot of them have done well with their principal residence, and they're going to get a tax-free windfall if they sell that and downsize into a smaller home. But as you know, you hear it almost every day when the pandemic news isn't overtaking the newscast, how we do have an aging population. A lot of nostalgia from when they were younger. Certainly myself, I'm not near retirement yet, but, and that's spoken more about my finances than my age, but they're attached to the cars they remember as kids that their parents drove maybe, or that the neighbor had down the street, or the ones they first drove when they got their driver's licenses. Those hold a special place more so than, I don't know, a Chevy Equinox or a Toyota Camry. And I think there's going to continue to be demand for them. And as time passes, there are going to be fewer of them. So I think supply, this supply is not going to go up. We'll just say that.
Right. It's a finite supply. So therefore value should go up.
One would think. Yes.
Well, Dave, this has really been good. I'm going to throw one more question at you, and caveat emptor, as someone getting into the market, is there one thing to really be aware of, or sort of how, if you were coaching someone to get into buying on your auction a collector car, what would you tell them?
Well, I'm going to repeat a couple things I've already said, Ron. I hope you pardon me for that. But in this market, the buyers are not buying a first car. They're not 17-year-olds buying a 15-year-old Corolla, say. They're going to have some experience with having bought and sold cars. They're not after the first car of the household either, in all likelihood. But the biggest thing is to trust your gut. Go see the car if you can. If it's a challenge, maybe have a friend nearby who can go see the car, a trusted friend nearby who can go see the car. I always end up looking. For some reason, I find all these used cars in Vancouver, and more than once I've sent a Vancouver friend out to check things out for me. So if it's a challenge, try to get someone to go see it. But I've done it too, where I didn't see the car and I didn't have a friend see the car. I got to know the seller before, mm-hmm. in terms of how he cared for his car before I made a deal. My closing thought on it is you're buying the seller as much as you're buying the car.
I like that. I think that's really something to understand. You're buying the seller, how that vehicle's maintained through the personality of the person that's selling it.
Sure. If it's yes, no, short answers, 3-minute phone conversations, that doesn't give me that warm, fuzzy feeling. Maybe I'll find another one.
I understand. Dave, this has been great. I think I found it very informative. I'm sure our listeners are going to find it really informative. You know, best of luck. Thank you, David Case, collectorcarcanada.ca. Best of luck with that program.
Thank you for introducing me to your listenership.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a good day.
Very good. Thanks, Ron.
And that was David Case from collectorcarcanada.ca. Join us next time for another interesting person from the car culture universe.